Should Wrigley home runs count for two?
No, I mean, comment.
It's been really, I mean, we know the last 3 years has been really difficult for everyone.
It's just nice to take advantage of days when they're like this.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse, live from Rally House in Geneva with David Haw and Bruce Levine on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome back Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine here at the Rally House in Geneva. Come join us, talk some baseball, register for a $250 gift card. You don't want to miss that. Lots of good stuff here. I think I could probably find a Dansby Swanson jersey somewhere. Yes, it is. Number 7 hanging up right there. And now we go to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, where we find the man who wears that jersey for a living, the Cubs shortstop, Dansby Swanson, after a hot Friday at the ballpark and the friendly confines. Good morning, Dansby. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Big weekend at Wrigley Field, and you started it the right way. Dansby, over the past month, you have been pretty hot. I just wanted to start there. What has gone so well for you the last 30 games or so where you have been able to produce as you have?
I mean, I wish the answer was always as simple, but, you know, really just continuing to stay diligent with my work and prep every day and going out and competing, trying to win baseball games. Sometimes you got to kind of dull it down in a way in order to get the results that you want, and that's kind of what I've been doing.
Dansby, I'm still upset from yesterday after the game where you complimented Patrick Mooney for his question and just walked by mine. So I'm still trying to get over it, but I will at some point. First of all, thanks for joining us this morning. And I want to know about the player-manager relationship, because understanding the motivation for each player is certainly the manager's job to be able to understand that. When a manager tells a Pete Crow Armstrong or a Kyle Tucker or a Dansby Swanson that we think the best thing for you is a day off today, how does that work with a guy like you that's played just about every game he can for his entire career?
Well, first of all, I always appreciate your questions, Bruce. You know that. I always appreciate them. That's why I don't even have to single them out anymore, because I always appreciate them. To answer that, I mean, obviously, the way I grew up in this game was taking the field no matter what. And that in itself presents its own challenges. And I think the more that you start doing it, you essentially – kind of condition and callous your body to be able to do it. It's just kind of like with pitchers that consistently throw a certain amount of innings. You know, there's some guys that are just unbelievable. Every season they're going to throw 175 to 180 innings, and that's so valuable to a team. For a position player, it's no different, right? Like you train all off season, and then you go through a season, and you're really trying to hit that 162 mark. And, you know, I think for me personally, a lot of it really is mental, but the same token, I do a lot of things to take care of myself physically, do a lot of things to recover and to be as sharp as I can, whether it's getting good nights of sleep consistently or, you know, putting the right kind of foods in my body or massages and treatment and all the different things. Those help you, you know, be able to last the season and to be able to do it well. So for me, I love playing. I love winning. I really do feel like we're better when I'm on the field. And so I'm going to take the field, you know, doing whatever I can in order to do that.
David, it's only fitting that we have a guy who played almost all of his games in his career on the 30th anniversary of Cal Ripken's record today. That's amazing. And I think Dansby thinks like that record and Gehrig's record, obviously there's a lot of that in you who just says, you know, we're just like you said, we're a better team, I think, when I'm out there trying to help us win.
I don't know if that record is beatable. I really don't. There's definitely some in this game that I don't see ever getting beaten, and that's definitely one of them.
Joined by Dansby Swanson here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine at the Rally House in Geneva. Dansby, there's a really fine line there, a balance maybe some players have to strike, because you do have the capability and the track record that when you're playing every day, you're playing every day. But there, we've seen examples with this Cub team that, you know, PCA benefits from some time off. Kyle Tucker benefited from a little bit of a respite. Mentally, even though physically you might hold up, mentally some players may need that. How difficult is it to know when you might need a break and when you might embrace that kind of approach by a manager like Craig Counsell?
Yeah, I mean, I think each player is unique in their own way, right? Each player benefits from days off. Some guys, you know, may like get a day off before an off day, in terms of like an off day in the schedule. So it's kind of 2 days back to back. You really just kind of need to know what it is that works for you, and sometimes put your pride aside to say, yeah, it'd be good to have a day to just watch nine innings of baseball and be able to sit over here, not really get riled up or think that I'm maybe going in a game, just be able to sit over here, watch a game. And there can be, you know, definitely some reset and refresh kind of mindsets that can go into that to really help a player. And, you know, a lot of that you leave up to the manager to help. And if anyone knows me, I definitely give my input whenever it's received.
We know how fans and media people like myself react when we hear a player is going down. If you had to do without a Kyle Tucker for a period of time, how does that impact you guys individually? Or is it truly, we trust all 26, next man up? How does a major league ball player look at those things as opposed to a fan?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of the two, right? Obviously, Kyle Tucker's an unbelievable player. He's, you know, kind of been a staple for us in this group this year. You know, just his at-bats are always so good, whether he's, you know, went through his little spell that he did. He's still finding ways to get on base and produce, which is a sign of a really great hitter. He's a guy that can play right field really consistently and runs the bases extremely well. That was something that I never really quite understood until playing with him, is that he's a really good base runner. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of the complete package. And whenever there's a guy like him that you may not have for a little bit of time, it obviously creates a little bit of void, you know, just a space that has to be filled. But at the same token, as a team, that's what a team is for. A team is for picking each other up. A team is for, you know, being able to fill that spot as best we can. We have a lot of guys on this team that are really talented and capable. And, you know, if we just continue sticking to what we've done all year of playing as a group, we can overcome really anything.
I'm curious, you mentioned your input and interaction with Craig Counsell, and we have come to know you as somebody who, as a leader of this team, is not afraid and feels like it's part of the job to be heard from. What's that dialogue like, and how often does it happen in the course of a season? We just got through the dog days of August, and we're heading into the stretch run. And how much do you offer your opinions on the day-to-day type of activities, and what does it extend beyond the manager with maybe Jed or Carter or whoever?
No, I mean, I've voiced my opinion in pretty much just out loud all the time. It's never necessarily a full-on sit-down. You can pretty much ask anyone. I'm probably the biggest trash talker on the team, just in terms of really anything. But, you know, it kind of keeps everyone, I guess, in a kind of a level-headed mindset in a way. And, you know, Counts is so great at being able to see things and have a kind of a vision for things that he wants to have happen and knows the path and plan to get there. You know, and so, you know, we kind of trust his vision with those things.
You certainly are a guy that's not afraid of discourse with media. You're there every day, talking to us. And, That's much appreciated by everybody. Not that your teammates don't do it, but you have a mind over matter type situation when it comes to your locker and being there, and you're not. I don't think you're impacted by what media hanging around your locker or distractions. I don't think distractions before a game happen for you, does it?
Maybe I might get like a, you know, those like mosquito repellent candles that you can get for your patio. Maybe I'll get one for my locker.
They don't work against me.
Disperse everybody.
They don't work.
No, at the end of the day, I'm here to do my job, and I really, really enjoy doing my job. So, you know, this is obviously a part of it. It's just a part of the responsibility, and a part of being a professional is speaking with media and, you know, not allowing it to, or not having it impact you. So, I mean, it's just kind of how I go about it.
You know this market from being here for several years, and you understand, you know, the responsibility of professional athletes. So when you look at this Cub team in season, you guys do have the fourth best record in baseball. You are in a position where 21 games over 500. By many accounts, that is a great season. Now, obviously, you're trying to catch the Brewers too, and there's been a lot of the start was so great that the last couple months have felt not so great. What's the right way to look at this season as a whole for Cub fans?
Yeah, I mean, I think this game is really law of averages. Like, it, guys have hot starts and slow second halves. Guys have, you know, a bad first month and great rest of the season. Like, this game is a marathon. So it's not necessarily about the first mile or the second mile, right? It's a full-on season. And that's why, you know, that's why you play all 162. So in terms of us as a group, obviously we started out, you know, just clicking on all cylinders, and then we've kind of had a little bit of a lull. But I feel like over the last couple of weeks, we've been playing a lot better ball and finding ways to win, no matter if it's scoring a lot of runs or beating somebody, you know, 3-2 or winning in extras. You know, we found a bunch of different ways to win games. And, you know, coming down this stretch, it really is just about finding yourself as a group and getting into a rhythm, you know, a full-on rhythm in terms of offense, defense, pitching, and kind of clicking on all cylinders going into, you know, the end of the season and into the postseason.
My last one for you, and again, we thank you for taking some time out today. It's a great favor. Appreciate it. David and I start the show by talking about how would we set up the three pitchers for the playoffs? And it's, you know, is it Horton? Is it Boyd? Is it Imanaga? There's not a bad choice there. How much goes on between players about talking about the same things that we talk about? How much is the baseball fan in Dansby Swanson and his locker mates, PCA and Michael and all the other guys around you, how much of that fan talk goes on between players?
Honestly, not a whole lot. There's a lot more of the, like, the intricate details of games that we talk about in terms of, you know, certain situations when they arise, how could we handle them differently, or, you know, praising someone for doing something right, you know, or doing it with the right intent, you know, just kind of talking about, you know, like, hey, I've noticed this about, you know, maybe your pitch selections in terms of, you know, a pitcher maybe throwing his breaking ball too much, or, you know, just kind of holding each other accountable a little bit to what we feel like is their best version. And, you know, that's what makes teams strong, is the ability to trust one another and trust what your teammate may see, whether it's your batting stance or, like, the pitch selection or just at-bats in general, or even just kind of personality. If you kind of been, you know, down on your luck and been mopey, you know, get called out for those things. That's more of the conversations that go on, just some good old ball talk, not necessarily the old fan talk about, you know, what could happen and all those kinds of things.
Dansby, we'll let you go, but as a noted trash talker on a Saturday in September, I just wondered, how would you address somebody who might point out that the Big Ten's closed the gap on the SEC?
I mean, when you just keep bringing in West Coast teams, all these other teams, it just is what it is.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is what it is. It's a lot of fun. Good luck to your Vanderbilt Commodores tonight against Virginia Tech down in the difficult territory?
Yeah, good old Vol Tech. I need it tonight. Need a big win, my boys.
Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thanks for joining us, Dansby. Appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way.
Yeah, thank y'all.
Dansby Swanson, Cubs shortstop, joining us from Wrigley Field. We are at the Rally House in Geneva. Want to come out and join us? You can shop around. There's only one place fans can count on for the best selection of Bears merchandise, and that's the Rally House. Looking for a new jersey to kick off the season, I see many choices to choose from. Rally House has it. Yes, shopping for sideline gear, you can see the players wear. Rally House has it. Shop online and at 10 local Rally House locations throughout the Windy City.
I don't see a Bill George.
You don't
I've been
no,
looking
no.
for.
Yeah, I don't. I do see some good options.
There's
you
great
talk
options
Bears?
Here.
We'll talk Bears next, Bruce.
Sure.
Season
why not?
Starts on Monday night. Dansby Swanson has been hot in the last month, Bruce. We talked about his home run yesterday. That set the tone for this series. But you look at the last month, and he's been a different hitter. I'm not sure what changed mechanically. I don't know if he was healthy. But heading into yesterday, he was slashing .256, .313, .478 with six doubles, a triple, and four homers before Friday's home run. He had also stolen three bases and struck out at just at 17.
What's that period of time?
Last 30 days.
Okay.
That's a pretty good stretch. And I think that people are tough on him and will be. The standard is pretty high because of the way he came in as a highly paid free agent shortstop. And maybe the last couple years haven't met those expectations. But I think that the last month or so has been very encouraging.
You don't win without a great shortstop in baseball. He is a great defensive shortstop. Okay? His offense comes and goes. It usually ends up 20 to 25 home runs, 70 to 80 RBI. But the availability of a great shortstop every day, that's a difference in on an awful lot of games. When you see great plays by him being made all the time and people don't even pay attention to it anymore, you know how great he is.
Yeah.
Right?
They take it for granted.
Yeah.
So when he bobbles
we
the ball.
We talk about you know Shaw's great plays and Nico's, but every single day Swanson's making a play that people are taking for granted. And he is the best, if not among the top two or three best defensive players that is available to the Cubs every single day.
You said something on the Mullen Haw show the other day. I think we just kind of glossed over it. But you referenced Matt Shaw, and you said gold glove. And I think it was in the same sentence. Did you mean that to be in the same sentence? Has he been that good?
Well, he's been playing gold glove third base.
Okay.
Is he a gold glover this year? You know, he's not going to be there for the entire year. Will he, you know, is he better than Cabran Hayes or some of the other great third basemen in the league? Is he better than Chapman? I would say the unconventional way that he makes every single play, even when the throws aren't strong throws, they're great throws right on the bag, allowing the first baseman to be able to attempt to get an out. It's been unbelievable. I've been shocked by his play at third base. It's the athleticism there has been off the chart.
I respect the way that he has responded to what has been a very uneven rookie year. Came in, made the team, went to Japan, had the high expectations, and then he's tailed off. He went down to Iowa. He rediscovered a few things. He adjusted his swing, and he came back. And through it all, he played the kind of defense that you just described at a position where you look at Maryland, he played shortstop. Then he was going to be the second baseman. Now he's at third out of necessity because he fits best there. And at the trade deadline, everybody, present company included, thought, well, you have to go out and get Gino Suarez because he's the guy that's going to put this team over the top. Matt Shaw has been better statistically and defensively since the trade deadline than some of the best third basemen in the sport.
So when you talk to the experts who have played the positions of short and third and done it at the highest level, they talk about feet, okay? Mm-hmm. Quickness of the feet, reaction time, but the quickness of the feet. Swanson has it. Nico has it. But so does Shaw. He has unbelievable
feet.
Unbelievable feet. He gets the balls athletically that a lot of third basemen can't get to. He's played shortstop. He's played second base during his amateur and professional career. So this is a guy that athletically has solved that problem. Again, the throws sometimes are, what kind of throw is that? But all of a sudden you see the end, the play, the guy's out.
I like the way that he isn't afraid to use the one-hop throw.
How about the four-hop throw?
Yeah, but those aren't by design. I think sometimes he uses the one-hop on purpose.
There. I mean, yeah. Council pointed this out to me the other day. No, he doesn't have the strongest arm in the world, but they're always on line. All his throws from all different angles are on line to the first base.
And the one thing I would say I notice as much as anything is how quickly he gets rid of the baseball. He knows, and that clock in his head,
correct.
He understands instinctively
point.
How he has to. He can't take any time. You see a lot of infielders who may not be natural at the position that they're playing take their time, and it costs them. Matt Shaw understands you can't – it's got to be reflex. He's got to go one motion, and he does that, and his quick release is what makes him – it makes him a third baseman who has played Gold Glove caliber defense.
I'm going to point this out again. People will get sick of it, but it's worthwhile right now. Player development continues on the Chicago Cubs, even though they're a team that's going to the playoffs. Player development with PCA, mm-hmm. player development with Shaw at third base, player development with Michael Bush at first. These are all second-year players right now, first-year player for Shaw. Amaya was just developing last year into the type of hitter they expected him to be, he expected him to be. So this is a continuous part of it, along with the pitchers, the young pitchers like Palencia's, in the bullpen that are coming along being important parts of hopefully a championship caliber team.
More on the Cubs player development at 11 o'clock when we welcome Jed Hoyer to the program. But we're going to talk next with Ozzie Guillen, who has seen some pretty good player development on the south side as well, with all of those rookies making all of those contributions, none bigger than Colson Montgomery. Goodness sakes, he homered again. He's got 18 now. We'll talk to Ozzie next. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We're at the Rally House in Geneva. Come and join us on 670 The Score.
1-2. Montgomery drives it deep into the Detroit night. Get out!
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine at the Rally House in Geneva talking baseball. And now it's time to go out to the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book, where we find our guy from CHSN, White Sox analyst, World Series winning manager from the South Side, Sox legend, Ozzie Guillen. Morning, Oz. How's it going?
Good morning, guys. Very good. Very good. Can't complain. Very happy
Ozzie,
the White Sox playing that way, yes.
Six straight victories. Six straight come-from-behind victories. The Sox are a 500 team since the All-Star break. What's going on there?
Defense. And I mean, those kids have been playing great offense. That's what I was missing early in the season. When they lost that many games by one run, right now, you know, it's not the home runs. It's not when the hitter and the circumstances on the game, tie games, playing good baseball, play good defense, pitching is being okay. I got to say it's good because the relievers, one point was a little struggle. They've been using a lot. Last couple of, you know, six games coming from behind, I mean the relievers have done a pretty good job.
Ozzie, you're always honest about everything. That's been a big part of me knowing you for the last 40 years now. When it comes to the manager, you've always been honest. You've been positive. You've been critical. How would you rate Will Venable's job with the White Sox this year?
I tell you what, very good, man. First of all, I judge manager by after the pregame show and postgame show when they're talking, just because when the game starts, you know what I mean? You're managing what you have. You try to do the best, put the players in the better position. We have been very honest with the fans, with themselves. It's just something very tough to do right now. Create a good bullpen. You know what I mean? Those guys come out and then pitch 2 innings, the next day pitch 1 inning. Then the starters go only 2 innings. You can see Jonathan Cano winning only 2 innings. And all of a sudden, they got to use, I call him Copperfield. He's a magician, what he does with the bullpen. you can see the way those guys be playing for him. So far, he's been very good. Obviously, you know what I mean? Just what he has. He made the best out of those kids. He made the best out of himself. Tremendous job. But the thing I love them the most, when he talk after the games, before the games, when he talk to the media, he never lied to nobody. He just tell you the truth, tell what it is. And it's one big part of, I really respect him for that.
Ozzie, we have seen Jordan Leisure work the ninth successfully. We have seen Grant Taylor have a nice run as the closer of the moment. And, hey, Mike Vassell has been invaluable in a lot of different roles, but you could maybe envision him in that spot. The Sox have maybe used this season to audition several different guys as potential closers. Do you like any of those options? Which one might have maybe edged ahead of the rest? And how important is it to have one guy?
Well, right now, it's one thing, confusing program. You know, you see the guy and one guy in the six, another guy in the seven. Then the next day you see him closing game. I think they try to figure out who they're going to use later on in the next year. We can say that. I like Taylor. He got good stuff. He's a little bit, you know, I mean, he's always put himself in trouble, but he get himself out of trouble because of the stuff he has. He have a great stuff, great breaking ball, unbelievable fastball. I think that's the guy I put the most, but at least he threw the ball good. But I really like the stuff of Taylor, and I think Taylor, if they say you're going to be the guy, I think he handled him very well. You know what I mean? Obviously, everybody had confidence when he threw 98, 99 with a great breaking ball. But he reminded me a little bit of Bobby Jenks. And I think in the end of the bullpen, they're going to have a pretty tough competition because Leisure threw the ball well. Vessel has been there. But I look around all the picture, I think Taylor is the best one they have right now.
Ozzie, the one thing that I always look at most on teams is defense. And first base has been troubling for me this year. I wonder your thoughts about, you know, they don't. Nobody talks about first baseman until you don't have a good one. I wonder what your thoughts are about first base. And is it really that much easier than other positions, or is it only noticeable when you don't have a good one?
You know, it's funny because our first baseman, what we have, you know, I mean, Frank Thomas, I never seen any hitter like that, but it wasn't bad. You know, it wasn't great. It was good. Pique, he played great first base for the White Sox. Soto, Abreu. Right now, you know, I mean, we thought Vaughn going to be the guy. Unfortunately, it wasn't. First base is the one of the hardest position in the infield. The reason is why. Okay? The reason is, if you're playing first base and you hit a ground ball to third base, you got to cover the back. If it's shortstop, you got to cover the back. Ball hit to the outfield, you're moving a lot. People say, oh, that position is not. But if you play shortstop, if they hit it to third base, you're not doing anything. You just watch your throw. First base, it has a lot of work to do in every single pitch. To me, one of the, you know, besides catching and pitching, is the one you move the most on the field. You move the most on the field. You don't need to be a gold glover, but it's the one missing almost every play happening in every pitch. It's not easy one. I think we, you know what I mean, I think right now Sosa, he need to work out there. Sosa, the way he play, if the guy can cover that base. Vargas, you know, we really don't have a legit first baseman. Like the guy said, listen, we have a first baseman. No, we don't have one. We have to create one. And I'm leaning to Sosa because the way he's hitting right now, but he played defense. Obviously, Vargas is better defensively player than Sosa is.
Talking with Ozzie Guillen here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score from the Rally House in Geneva. You want legit, Ozzie. You got a legit shortstop. Since being called up July 4th, it's been nothing but fireworks for Colson Montgomery. 18th home run last night, 51 games this season. How in the world is he doing this, and what changed about his swing, about his approach? What changed overall to make him one of the best stories in the league in the second half?
Wow. Well, I see this kid swing the bat in the minor leagues through the TV. I never seen it in life. And I told Chuck, I said, no way this kid's going to be a big league player anytime soon. I had a lot of holes, long swing, seemed like, you know, was confidence. Then I never see him play shortstop in the minor league. And I told Chuck, I said, I have real doubt he plays shortstop because his size. But I never see him playing shortstop. Now, come to the big league, start his swing, still struggle. You know, he only hit about, 220. But this kid's a great shortstop, a great baseball player, great athlete. One thing about the difference between being a great athlete and being a good player, a good player can do a lot of things. Great athletes, they're not a baseball players. They're just good athletes. And this kid do a lot, man. This kid is you can see the enthusiasm. You can see the love of the game. You can see he's ready to play in the big league. You can see when he prove people wrong. The only part I like to see him better is, you know, he strike out a lot. It's a home run or nothing. And he show people in the clutch is the best they have. You know what I mean? They keep all the home run hits. Most of the home run hits, is to put the team up front or to cut the lead or to tie the game. You know, he hit it an important time, just those home runs, at least 14 of them, very, very important home runs. In shortstop, I was shocked the way he handled himself shortstop. I was shocked because I never thought he would be that good. It could be a normal shortstop. Like, well, but he's, he go out there and he got a good range, great arm. His baseball performance mentally is pretty good. Obviously, he will learn. It's one thing I like him the most, or everybody. All those kids have been great. They're learning. Well, they're not learning. They're learning how to play in the big league level, how to win, and hopefully this stretch teach them, or they can keep it up in their brains, how is a winning team had to be built. And I think that right now, so far, have been fun to watch, fun to see. I'm proud what Chris Gett did. Guys, you know, peace, well, see you later. Back to the minor league. No cookie monster in the big league. You got to show me you can pitch or you cannot. Yeah, because sometimes people fall in love with players. And it's because they're a first-round pick, because they spend a lot of money. I know. You can see Jonathan Cano come to big league. I know the reason he did, because they need a pitcher. He could have pitched the next 3 days. I understand that. But I see struggle throwing the ball. See you later. I'll see you soon. And also, one thing I like about the White Sox right now, every guy is in the staff. You got to compete this year to make the ball club. And I think that's a good thing about it, because I think right now, maybe Martin is the one more consistent pitcher we have, or they have. Is the one, is, you know what I mean? But I think everybody should be go back there and compete for the spot next year in spring training.
Speaking of next year, on November 2nd, day after the World Series, Chris Getz has to make up his mind whether or not to bring back Luis Robert or not, pay him $20 million, give him a $2 million buyout. If he comes to Ozzie Guillen and says, Ozzie, I don't know what to do here. And again, I know how much you love Luis as a potential player, as I do. What is your response to Chris Getz about keeping Robert for that money or not?
Yes. The only thing I worry about is health. Right now, Bruce, right now, a decent player. No, he's just a decent player. And Pantera show how good it can be, and also show how bad it can be. But with that money, $20 million is nothing. I don't know if they're going to do, say, can we restructure your contract? But I think this guy, he can bring a lot of different things to the table. You know what I mean? Look at Bruce Boxton. Boxton from Minnesota Twins. Everybody talk about him when he's on the field. But he really do nothing right now. No, I know something impressed me. One of the best players in American League, right, you know, in the past. That's why, I don't know, I will keep him. I pick his option. Then after I pick his option, I want to see how we play. Then hopefully play very good for me next year. And if he's not playing good for me, then I will trade him.
Isn't it wishful thinking to think that a player who's always injured is not going to get injured again?
No, it's hard to say that because when you see, I don't know that type of injuries right now. I think the player is a little soft. I think the players need Hermie Snyder to working with them, make sure they don't want to be in the training room. But I like I say, you know what I mean, Pantera, he can make a lot of things happen. Where, okay, if Pantera leaves the White Sox, who going to play center field for the White Sox? Montgomery is a baby.
Somebody you spend money on, bring in three players for that $20 million and try
to... I'm with you, Oz.
Try to fortify the team.
Bring them back.
Listen, who will play center field for the White Sox? Bowen? No chance.
Next man up. Got to go get somebody. Got to go get a center fielder.
Okay, who you going to get? That's the question. You think you're going to get a center fielder?
Give me the $20 million. I'll find you a center fielder.
I don't think you'll find one.
Anyway, you give me $20 million. I'll find a lot of great players from Venezuela. We'll cover that.
You're the best, Oz. We're going to let you go. Be grandpa for the rest of today. Really appreciate you.
Thanks so much, buddy. All right. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. All right, buddy.
Ozzie Guillen from Chicago Sports Network. The Sox play the Tigers tonight, 5:10 in Detroit. Martin Perez, who Ozzie mentioned, goes against Tarik Skubal.
White Sox have been an outstanding story.
They really are.
But sustainability is what I'm looking at. Okay,
yeah, no doubt.
Are these players sustainable? We've seen better young players come through the organization. Teal, Cuero, Montgomery. To a certain extent, some young pitchers like Taylor. Again, people are going to get excited whether it's 99 or 100 losses. It's a better team with a better future.
Is Colson Montgomery a superstar in the making?
I have no idea.
312-644-6767. What do you think? Let us know inside the clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
3-2. Montgomery gets all of this one. Back it goes. Get out. That one went a long way into the upper deck.
Here's John Shrippen from the Chicago Sports Network for that highlight. Colson Montgomery, another home run. David Hall, Bruce Levine, it's inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 Score at the Rally House in Geneva. Come join us, talk some baseball. Listen to our conversation. Jed Hoyer coming up at the top of the hour. Bruce, at the beginning of the season, this White Sox team came in relying on, depending on, talking about the young pitching core, the infrastructure throughout the minors and the young pitchers on the major league staff. The young pitchers were going to be what the White Sox followed to prosperity eventually. The rebuild was going to be built on that foundation. Boy, things have changed. From Montgomery to Kyle Teal to Chase Mydroth to Edgar Carroll, you have 10, 11 rookies that have contributed, but many of them have been positional players. The focus has been shifted, I think, and I wonder, number one, is that a good thing for the White Sox moving forward? And secondly, how surprised might Chris Getz be by this development?
Should not be surprised. Okay. There's no linear development to entire organizations of pitching. Okay, there's just, you know, we can talk about one pitcher at a time. Look how long it took the Cubs to develop a starting pitcher in their organization that was signed, that was scouted, signed, and then brought up. It took somewhere between 7 and 10 years to develop their own pitcher when Steele finally became a start. It took, yeah. He was in the organization 8 years mm-hmm. before he developed, okay? Same thing with Javier
Assad.
Yeah. He's been in their system for eight or nine years. So to think that a team automatically goes out and gets young pitchers and they all develop into major league pitchers, totally naive. I don't think they expected that. I think they wanted to put a lot of numbers together on young pitchers that they went out and got.
Conventional wisdom in baseball, though, is it better to build around the young pitching, which are prone to injury and inconsistency, or young positional players that are mostly, you know, easier to count on in the everyday lineup?
How did Epstein do it?
Pretty good. He bought his pitching, and he developed the position players. Right. If the Sox follow that model, I think you feel better about
it. Well, the Sox are not ready at any time soon to start buying players.
Well, they better at least
with
consider
what?
Some.
With what? Where are they getting that money from?
Well, I know. Times are tough, but $70 million payroll, they're a 500 team since the All-Star break. Haven't they earned the right to go out and spend a little bit? Josh Naylor, Kyle Schwarber, somebody like that, Gino Suarez. They have to be in the conversation, don't they?
Yeah.
Those kind of conversations?
Sure, except with a strike lockout looming in 27, how much money are you putting forward on your team?
Well, that's a really good point. That's a longer conversation, and we don't have time for that now, but we will get back to that later. What we have to do now is prepare during the break for Jed Hoyer. What are we going to ask the Cubs team president? Because he will join us next on Inside the Clubhouse. We are at the Rally House in Geneva. If you haven't visited your local Rally House in the Chicago area yet, what are you waiting for? Rally House is constantly bringing in the latest styles and restocking the most popular Bears gear. You can get it here. I think I see Colston Loveland jersey. I'm sure Caleb Williams is hanging around somewhere, making every visit fresh with the best style. The Rally House in Geneva.
That's a Haw score jersey up there.
Why is that half price? Bruce Levine, David Haw, we are at the Rally House in Geneva. When we come back, it is going to be Jed Hoyer, the Cubs team president, talking about maybe the latest with Kyle Tucker and what's ahead for his team. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.